Conciliums
with Pete and Charlie.
I'm Pete.
I'm Charlie.
The unity of knowledge.
That and a whole bunch of caffeine is what's going to get us through this. Hey, Pete.
Yes, Charlie?
Guess what?
I'm going to try and get a grant.
Cool.
I'm entering into this world.
Mm-hmm.
I do not understand it.
Of grantsmanship.
Grants and awards and gifts and foundations.
So you're begging for money now.
Endowments. I'm not begging yet.
Okay.
I haven't found a person to beg from.
Okay.
The more I learn about the grant system at Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. i.e. the grant system and how Georgia Tech interacts with it,
right,
the less comfortable I feel with it, because I'm clearly not, I was not trained in it, and I have not built my professional identity in a grant,
right,
you know, a grant-funded world.
Right.
Unlike, it would seem, most of you, academic faculty and research faculty in particular.
We live in the grant world. And there are other people, you know, municipal people that live
what
in the grant world.
What did you just say?
Municipal people.
Municipal?
Municipal? There are chunks of government institutions that live on soft money. Right?
How's it?
So there may be cities and states and counties that the person that is there only exists when there is a grant available to pay them.
Yes.
Right?
The sort of,
so,
the sort
seismic,
of endowed chair,
right,
of the
so
local government.
So seismic, for example, which is, what does that stand for?
Doesn't matter.
That's our K-12 outreach folks.
Yeah.
And they do
go.
A
That's
really good job because they have a really good director now. And they get a lot of grants. So some of their people are permanent positions here, but many of them are in what we call soft money. That is money that goes quarter to quarter, year to year, two, three-year period.
Have you lived like that? Have you worked like that before?
Well, my summers are like that. My summers are paid for out of grant money. So,
because you're only paid for 9 months
of
a
year. Right. So Georgia Tech Research Institute has a lot of people on soft money. And it's tough. It's a hard existence, because one of my postdocs that works for me under an NSF education grant, he was on soft money with them, and the money comes and goes, and you never know whether you're going to get paid next fiscal quarter.
So
this is not a good way to live.
Yeah, let's get a little more simple here.
Yeah.
So I draw a salary,
mm-hmm.
12 months.
Right.
I'm non-tenure track faculty.
Yeah, so you don't have to worry about your summer.
Right. I just work. I show up. Mm-hmm. I practically punch a clock.
But if you
library.
Get a grant, you can pay for additional resources to do great things.
Like extra stuff.
Yeah.
But I haven't had to really yet. And we'll get to why I'm doing this in a little while. You also draw a salary.
Right.
But somehow your salary is different than mine. Not only is it larger, it's also built into just 3/4 of the year.
Right. Right.
Because traditionally, professors don't teach over the summer, which is not true at Tech, really.
Yeah. We have a lot of summer classes. I'm working on some online summer classes, actually.
But you're 9 months. You get paid for 9 months, mm-hmm. and you get paid well for 9 months, right?
Well, well's relative. I do okay.
You do okay.
Yeah.
So, would you just take a summer off, ever?
You can.
Yeah, but would you? You, Pete?
I haven't.
Okay. So, for your summer to be effective or something, you have to go and get paid a different way.
Yeah.
That's what a grant really is. Get paid a different way.
Right.
How's that working for you? How does that feel?
Constant pressure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it worth it? What's the benefit to you or to the Institute?
Oh, what is the benefit? So the benefit is, even during our regular 9 months, much of our grant money pays for equipment, materials and supplies, and graduate students and postdocs to do research.
Why isn't Tech paying for you to do that?
Oh, Tech doesn't have that kind of money.
Whoa, what kind of money are we talking about?
Oh, well, this can be an entire new show. State universities have had their
budgets.
When
you say entire new show, you mean yet another topic? Or
yet
another
topic.
Okay.
Another podcast. State universities have had the contribution from their states slashed over the last several decades. So I'm not singling out anything about Tech. This is true of all major state universities.
But the reason that I'm surprised is because doesn't Tech have like a $4 billion budget?
We do, and a lot of that comes from external research. And some of that goes to overhead. Overhead is basically the cost of keeping the phones running and the lights on and, you know, the buildings maintained.
And the beautiful Wi-Fi and T1 connections.
Yeah. But and I don't think I'm saying anything unique about tech. I mean, we're all kind of living on the edge.
So a lot of that $4 billion is not, it's money that it's people have applied to get from other people. From
The National Science Foundation. So when I get a grant, they skim off the overhead amount, and that goes to sort of support things.
If you had to guess, what would be the tuition and state money? What would that amount be?
I don't know. I'm not going to guess. I know it's decreasing. Actually, the person we should have on the show is someone from administration, maybe the vice president of research office.
All right. Well, I'll back away from the ecosystem then. So, what wouldn't it be better? Just wouldn't it be better if you were, paid for 12 months and you didn't have to go seeking money?
Oh, there's a name for that. The European system. So... in major European universities, and I'm going to use as my example the Eidgenössische Technische Hochschule Zürich, where I was a postdoc, where my advisor moved when I was in graduate school, and other, I want to say German universities, because Germany invented this research university system. Mm-hmm. Really came out of there. When you're a full professor, you have your salary is paid 12 months. You have a secretary. You have a certain number of graduate student slots, maybe postdoc slots, maybe research science slots. You already have these slots to run your group. And then if you do get grants, that's just gravy on top of that. But you have the minimum amount to be productive and do all sorts of interesting research.
Right. You don't have that.
We don't have that. But here's the deal. For most departments in, the UK or Germany or Switzerland or places in Europe, you have only three full professors. Only three folks.
How many professors in your department?
We have more than 10 times that. But what's interesting is because it's entrepreneurial. So because it's entrepreneurial, you can have more people that have this professor title where they can do what they want as long as they can find the money for it. Whereas these big honorific professorships, they give you the money and you're all set. Very few people get to earn that. You have to earn that, and very few people get that. It's a great place to be, but I'll never forget, there was a professor at MIT when I was in graduate school who was lamenting this difference, saying, oh my God, the grants and the money and the hassle. If I were back in, I think he was from Greece, I wouldn't have to worry about this stuff. Although now, maybe Greece
now
does.
He would. Yeah, right.
But, a couple decades ago, before Greece had an economic issue, they wouldn't have. So it's a trade-off. They have fewer folks at that level, but they get the money supplied, whereas here everyone's got to work for it, but you have more people doing it.
So how hard is it to get a grant? And also, when we say grant, there's a bunch of different ways a grant can be a grant. There's a bunch of ways. There's gifts, endowments, all that.
Yeah.
So when I say grant right now, I'm just talking about the whole wide world of proposing that some outside... proposing some outside entity provide the funding for research,
In a
travel,
area.
And salary, separate from who you draw your paycheck from.
Right.
Okay. So how hard is it for you to get a grant?
Well, I am not the rainmaker in grantsmanship, but I think even the folks that do bring in the big bucks realize it takes a lot of effort. You work at it for a while, you very times submit the grant once or twice and it doesn't get funded and you keep refining it. So I don't think it's all that easy.
Is your research driven? Is your research changed? Your focus changed because of what you can fund?
Ding, 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 ding.
Isn't that,
we have ourselves a winner.
Isn't that bad?
But this is the reality in which we live, right? I mean, the president said the other day when he was criticizing the media, he said, I understand it's a business, but I think he was implying that you need to find a balance between the business end and then doing the right stuff, reporting the right stuff. For us, it would be researching the right stuff. So there is stuff that I sort of do on the sly in my off time with a couple undergraduates that we haven't had funded yet.
How do they do that? Is it just because they're volunteering?
Well, yeah. So that's
isn't
actually...
that exploitative?
I don't think so. The undergraduate student comes in, and sometimes my undergraduates are working on things that we will get funded or we have funded now. But you give them a project to sort of put together the beginnings of a computer simulation of some unique polymers that we don't have any funding to do. And then I've got a graduate student myself. We sort of do a little work on it on the side. And if we get some interesting preliminary results, we can turn that into a grant. Because we have collaborators here who are making these polymeric materials. We'd like to model them to explain why they have such unique behavior. So it's a good synergy, and we might be able to write a grant. M.G. Finn, who's the chair of the School of Chemistry.
Wait, writing a grant. That's like filling out a big old proposal.
Yeah, right? So a grant proposal.
With an explanation of why it would be good
and
what you want to do.
Yeah, and you can't just say, look, dude, this would be really good. You should give us the money. You know, very often you already have to have
to use that voice.
Results. It might. Depends. Depends who you're applying to. Somebody. There are some weird foundations in this country, and I used to get a bulletin of weird stuff from the grants people in development, the ones who go after foundations. And it was, I call it like the weird weekly letter or something like that. And I don't get it anymore. I got to call those guys up. And one of them was like, you know, you'd have just weird stuff. Like someone's offering, you know, $90,000 to work on cure for this particular type of cancer. Another one was outreach to help people be educated and understand the value of medical marijuana. I always looked at that thing. Can I do anything in that? So there are some weird foundation places.
Do you think you'd have no lack in volunteers? For test subjects?
Well, I don't think you could do anything illegal. So it was more of an education type grant. I do occasionally cruise the grant databases for the word humor.
Do you get in on the pivot?
The pivot you were implying?
Pivot, the directory of grants.
Oh, is that what it's called? Is that the online version?
Yeah, pivot.
Oh, maybe that's the one I do look
pivot?
At. It could be. I forget what it's called.
Where you get a profile and you tell it who you are and what you can do. And they're like, oh, these are the grants that are good for you.
No. I think the last time I looked this up was in grants.gov, which is the big government
yeah,
one.
Right.
And believe it or not, it was there. Somebody wanted to evaluate the use of humor in a particular educational project, which is something that I do. I got to look this time to look that up again. So there's a lot of different grants, but usually you already have to have some preliminary results that suggest that this could be successful. If it's the National Institutes of Health, we lament that you almost have to do a big chunk of the project before you can get the money.
Mm.
Their bar is very high. You need to show efficacy and safety on a protocol already and then say, oh, we're going to make this even better and take it to the next level. So, RO1, which is a rather large single investigator or maybe a couple investigator grant at the National Institutes of Health, is tough to get.
How long did it take you to get a feel for all this? To be like, oh,
I still don't think I have a good feel for it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Some people are very good at it.
It confuses the hell out of me.
So, but that's okay. You just got to jump in and do it. And if you fail, try it again.
Yeah.
So,
have you heard of this blue sky money stuff?
No, what's blue sky money?
Well, I think it's called blue sky, but it's like ideas in the clear blue sky. You know, the sky goes on forever. You just think of what could you do? You know, blue sky.
Is this the name of the foundation you're applying to?
No, it's like blue sky money through the Institute, where you can get essentially petty cash. I mean, it's obviously a lot more than $50 for lunch, but it's petty cash in terms of foundation money to try and get something started.
Oh, yeah. So these are called seed grant projects, and we do offer those locally. We have those at Georgia
Tech.
Well,
what I want to do is there's a bunch of there's some people at MIT, some people at Northeastern, there's a Boston architect, and then there's me and Greg Nobles. And I was thinking
Greg Nobles,
professor of history here.
Who was also the former director of
the Honors Program. Yeah.
I know Greg quite well. I like Greg. He's a cool dude.
So he connected me with this architect, and now we're talking about this project of trying to create a virtual and physical environment / tool to map and keep track of a constellation of knowledge related to particular research question. You'd be able to program the question in. It would sort of be like a tool for the lab, you know, keep track of new resources, new publications, and then also be able to visualize, you know, what that publication cites and what publications reference it. And so you could sort of see the lines of influence and importance and impact.
Okay. So you're trying to do an associative graph of the information that's already in some databases and Google and things like that.
Not just a graph, yes, but not just a graph, but more of an interactive visualization. You can go in there and find the stuff. Like, instead of a list of search results, this is a dynamic rendition of search results, you know?
So how is it more dynamic than simply the hypertext version of references and papers that I can look up? No, because it'll tell me all the things. So I look up one thing. I pick a paper.
Yeah.
It'll tell me all the different references in there and connect them all.
It will, but in this way, it's a little more like a word cloud. You know, that's something that is referenced and cited would be a bit bigger, right? But also, we try and see those lines, those interdisciplinary lines. Mm-hmm. If you imagine, so imagine two papers.
Interdisciplinary. Yes, very important.
Imagine two papers right now.
One of those soft skills we talked about in the previous show.
Think a line goes up from each of them and a line goes down from each of them. And the line up represents what it references that paper. And the lines down represent the citations that it references, right? Now, those two straight lines may be, you know, interesting as lists of search results, but now what if they cross, right? And what if you find those nodes where these two papers relate? Now another paper, another paper, another paper, you know, and then you find those nexuses where these lines from these papers all
match. I'm digging it. Yeah. And I'm digging it because now those multidisciplinary connections are difficult to root out. I mean, I'm working in education, humor, engineering, innovation, psychology, sociology, and all those mean something. I mean, I was driving in today listening to the audiobook of Think Fast and Slow.
Yeah.
And it was talking about associative activation.
What about medium, Pete? Can't we think medium?
There is no medium.
There's only Zool.
There's only Zool. And I realized it had...
We should try and do that joke every single episode from now on.
It had application to the way I convince people that an engineering is idea for a grant. And also it had application in humor.
Yeah,
because I realize as soon as you start with the beginning part of a joke, there is already associative activation. And if you can use the concept of priming those associative activations, you could actually make a joke better. Now, people have known this for decades. They use it in sales. So the psychology of sales, the cognitive science of sales.
You've talked about this. Yeah,
I've gone to seminars at engineering conferences on this sort of stuff. But these connections, they give you new and interesting ideas of how to do things that are multidisciplinary.
So this is the thing
this is a great idea. I love it.
And it's totally in the poetry phase of it right now. Like what I just said to you is about as far as we've got.
Yeah, and until you can describe that in a more concise way that people can understand it, you will never get a grant.
So what I would,
but I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
Feeling
so what I would like to do is I would like to get all these people who are interested in a room together, right?
Yeah.
For a symposium of sorts, you know, to kind of get.
Ooh, excellent.
And not for the public, for ourselves. Like, let's get, you know, there's about 9 people maybe who are interested.
Yeah.
Most of them are in Massachusetts.
Okay.
A couple of them are here. So now what I need is go to Massachusetts with me and Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Stay there 1, 2, 3 nights, maybe 2 nights, right?
Yeah. And so you're talking about applying for a travel grant.
Yeah.
To do that.
And do a couple 8-hour, 9-hour days with breaks built in.
Yeah.
So now we're talking about food. Yeah. All right. We're talking about tools. Talking about
you can't
a space.
Buy food from the innocent. Oh, but you can buy travel.
But this is what I'm saying. Like this blue sky money, I'm told, is like if you want to try and get something started. So we describe.
Yeah.
Here's this meeting.
Yeah.
To essentially do.
And you're not asking for a lot of money.
Oh, no, I don't think so. Like a couple hotel rooms, a couple plane tickets.
Not that much.
Snacks 3 times and you know, post-it notes and whiteboards and space rental, which probably we wouldn't have to rent space if we've got MIT on our back.
Yeah, they can find a room.
At our back.
Yeah. So then, that is an efficient use of resources.
So then out of that, I think could come a report or a white paper, you know, or the resources for a white paper that would describe the project.
Right.
Now, partly, I only have this idea because one of the people from the Office of Sponsored Programs said, well, this is the kind of thing you could do. You could get blue sky money to try and get a thing going. It's like, oh, well, I can think of a way to get things going. But I wouldn't have thought of it if they hadn't said, essentially, you can just get some money.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm going to try that. But then also, I feel kind of like, well, is this just how you do it? You just kind of bumble around? Like, Am I gonna buy a trip to Boston
you get a lot of connections, and you go to the weird little symposium where the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, or the National Science Foundation, or the National Institutes of Health has a meeting to explore these things. And it's important to go to that. So I got invited to one on the use of computation in chemistry and chemical engineering years ago. It was at the National Academies building in Washington, and all people did was sit around saying, well, the thing we should stress, the real trend that we should fund is this particular area. And I go, hey, isn't that your research area?
Right.
So I wish it was all perfect and there was no political, edge to it, but it's not perfect either.
Because I feel a little bit like this is a scam that I'm entering into. And
yeah, there are some people with an unfair advantage because they know the landscape a little better.
Yeah, and let me be very explicit about this. I believe in this project and I would like to do it.
Mm. That sounds good.
I think that it would be good for an in-person meeting to happen.
Yeah.
Now, just because the number of people, the balance, like two people in Georgia,
five people, you go
to Massachusetts. I like Boston. If I were to go to Boston, I would make a point to go to Newbury Comics and Charlie's Kitchen and have
Newbury
a burger.
Newbury Comics? You're the only person I know who knows who Newbury Comics is other than people from Boston.
I might go down to Central Square and go to that.
Do they still have that weird pumpkin head dude with the...
Oh, I haven't been back to Boston in years.
It's was drawn by a second grader. It's like a smiley face with hair coming.
I got nothing. I don't
Newbury
know.
Newbury Comics is a cool place.
I don't know, but I would go check out Harvard Square. I would
Boston Garden.
Check out that little pit and see if the rockers look the same as
they did. The swan boats.
It would be a trip, and I would enjoy it, Yeah. And also, it's kind of thinking in a concentrated way, it's hard. It's a long day of work.
Yeah.
But, imagine that symposium, that sort of project, that would be fun as hell, right?
But it's also fun because you like the idea.
Yeah. So I'm going to ask for money to do that, and it's kind of I wouldn't
mention that in your off time, you're going to go to Newbury Comics.
But also, any trip like this, everyone understands that you're not going to work 24 hours a day. That's not what happens.
No, you're not. And you need to sharpen the saw in between.
Yeah.
The last time I went to Boston was for an NSF grantees conference. I used my NSF grant money to go there. We were required to use our money to go there. I spent most of the day in symposia at the conference, learning about interesting trends about NSF and science. And actually, they had a great one on media outreach. And I wanted to go to that because that's something I like to do, educational outreach with humor. They do it with TV and radio, and I do that. You do that. But it was canceled. I was disappointed. But I was a little surprised. I was in a ballroom with 400 seats. And I think Larry Bottomley, who's from chemistry, who also had a grant in that program, we were sitting in there with maybe 50 people listening to this talk. It was a very interesting talk. I think a lot of people just went sightseeing and didn't go to the
Nobody ever. Conference. I mean, it's so few people go to this stuff. Anyway, so...
And you don't necessarily have to go to all of it, but I think you should go to some of it.
Well, but this thing that I'm trying
I think this is a great idea.
This would be... Yeah, it would be a two-day meeting,
you
right?
Illustrate a very interesting thing, that there are levels of grants, right? So there is that... Get some money to travel to get an idea started. Then there is a seed grant thing to do preliminary research to get enough preliminary research to put in a grant proposal. There is also, and the NSF is good at funding these. We're actually looking at one right now. Lou Left and myself, the folks at Seismic and Mark Rydell, David Hu, on humor and its application to a lot of really interesting things. That kind of fits in this interface of our last show, The Renaissance Engineer, these soft skills. And, that's something where, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000 is not a lot of money. But if you could, you have a conference, so it's open to the public, but you invite, five or 10 speakers, and then you get local people, and the people present a poster session, and they talk about ideas, and you write a report on it, and you say, what came out of this? This is how ideas start.
Yeah.
Trips, preliminary results.
This is the getting a bunch of people together who have different loads of facts and fact combinations to bounce off of each other.
And then you have a focus thing where you write this grant where one or two researchers work on a project with a few graduate students and a postdoc. Then you have the big centers.
Oh, yeah.
Multi-million dollar
And I forgot the most important piece of this. When we do that thing, we'd also hire some grad students to take the notes.
Okay.
There's some reasons to spend money.
Right, right. And to be honest, a lot of people would say, well, why do you have graduate students just be in your lackeys and working there.
Because it's so much easier to talk freely when someone else is taking the notes.
And I will say this, though. One of the more interesting things I got involved in when I was a graduate student at MIT was a conference on technology law. And it turns out the professor, I took a course on technology, the law of it was intellectual property law, I think. A guy named Robert Ryans, quite a character. I believe he's passed away. But he's the guy who founded the Franklin Pierce Law Center, which is a law school that specializes only in intellectual property law. It's up in New England. And he wanted to start a law school at MIT. Really crazy guy. He did a, and I mean that in a good way. Very interesting character. I learned a lot from him.
Starting a school takes a lot of money.
And he invited a few graduate students. And basically, we got our conference paid for us. We could attend the conference, and we got, you know, breakfast and lunch and a snack in the afternoon or something. And all we had to do was do a little grunt work and introduce some of the speakers. So I had to introduce some lawyer talking about the Apple versus Franklin lawsuit, about the look and feel of interfaces. It's a landmark case. And the guy before me, or maybe that was the case, and I had to introduce somebody else. Whoever the guy before me was saying, yeah, and, you know, the subtle issues about the judge and the law are very important, too, because, you know, this particular judge didn't trust anyone with a beard. So if you walked in there with facial hair, immediately held it against you.
It's a very particular time.
So I was wearing a full beard at the time. I said, despite the fact that I may not be trustworthy because of my facial hair situation, allow me to introduce the next, you know, speaker or something like that. No, but it was an. I learned a lot. It was very interesting. So to get some graduate students involved in that kind of thing, what I'm saying
good
is some people might
too,
say,
yeah.
What are you hiring these guys and paying them to take your notes? No, to get them involved in these ideas helps them think about starting new ideas too. It's a good thing. You could even use undergraduate students. I think that would be great.
No, I don't trust an undergraduate.
Sure you do.
No, I don't.
You're being sarcastic, aren't you?
Maybe a little bit.
Mm. I love this idea. I think it's great.
So how would you sum up the question of grant-funded research and lives, professional lives?
What's the descriptive word I would use for those that find grants? I want to say whores. You know, I don't know how else to describe it, right? I mean, we don't pull punches on this podcast. You're just pimping yourself out there. You really are. I mean,
God, man.
It's tough. It's tough. You really got to network. You really got to work the room. And yes, it does change what you want to do. But if you believe enough in what you want to do, you can bend the will of the universe such that you find a good compromise to do something that's important and you're passionate about and is fundable.
How are you going to get out of this life? Who's your Richard Gere who's going to take you out of this business?
There is none. I will die frustrated and alone at my desk.
This is Consilience with Pete and Charlie, a podcast about the intersection of science and the humanities.
The unity of knowledge. I always like to say that part.
You can find us on Facebook, you can subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can always get in touch with me or Pete if you look on Twitter and other social media.
And can't you also find us on Tumblr at peteandcharlie.tumblr.com?
Thank you.